Moving on now, this morning, the sisters of the woman who was shot and killed by Capitol Police just days ago are now speaking out to ABC News. They're giving us a clearer picture of Miriam Carey, a mother with a history of mental illness. Her sisters argue she did not deserve to die. ABC's Gio Benitez is on the story. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Dan. The sisters are on a mission for answers, and now they're sitting down with us. And you're about to see these two women are remarkably composed.
Overnight, the sisters of Miriam Carey telling us she was a loving mother who had dreams of being a teacher and a dentist, not a criminal.
Was she a violent person?
No, she wasn't.
But police say they were forced to shoot and kill the 34-year-old Thursday in the nation's capital. Even though she had no weapon in the car, police say Carey's black Infiniti was weapon enough after ramming into White House barricades. Carey's one-year-old daughter, Erica, right there in the car with her.
She didn't have any political agenda. She didn't hate her country, anything like that. She wasn't a terrorist. She did have a diagnosis of postpartum depression with psychosis. She was on medication.
The sisters are speaking from unique backgrounds. Amy Carey Jones is a registered nurse, and Valerie Carey is a retired NYPD sergeant.
Officers had enough time to assess the occupants of the vehicle. They actually not only just put someone in harm's way, they took someone's life.
Postpartum depression is so common that one in 10 women will experience it. But the psychosis made Carey's case much more severe.
Mental illness really should have more attention.
Sources say that last year, the father of Carey's daughter called police, reportedly out of concern over her claims that President Obama had placed her house under electronic surveillance, something her sisters say they never heard her talk about. But this morning, they want to shine a light on her illness and whether police handled it appropriately.
If there's something you could say to Miriam right now, what would you say?
We just wish you were here.
And the family has hired an attorney to help investigate what happened Thursday. They have not taken any legal action, at least not yet.
Not yet. All right, Gio, thank you.
Thanks, Gio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At the outset, I know that I joined the majority leader in expressing our gratitude to the Capitol Police.
United States Secret Service and Capitol Police officers, from what I have seen so far in this investigation, acted heroically in trying to stop this suspect from entering the security perimeters at both locations.
And I just want to reiterate the heroic work of the United States Capitol Police officers at multiple locations, in addition to rescuing the child out of the vehicle.
Context of white supremacy. Heroic. Didn't hear that word heroic used last week in response to what happened in Washington, D.C. 2013, kill an unarmed black mother with her one-year-old daughter in the car. Got some white heroes. Wow. Some of those same people who were applauding were cowering on the floor last week. Now they want to blame and impeach President Trump. Context of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, 2021, January 13th, 2021. So I have been told, before we get to our guest and serious business, Miriam Carey's murder, we had an avalanche of difficulties just in the last 12 hours since we broadcasted. So we were here yesterday, Tuesday. We had private investigator Patrick J. McKenna. We talked about he worked on the O.J. Simpson case. He found the Mark Furman audio recordings. We talked about all of that. Book club tomorrow, talking about Jeffrey Toobin's The Run of His Life, the O.J. Simpson case. Went over all that. Great information. He compared O.J. Simpson to George Floyd. I would have fallen out on the floor and called him all kinds of names, him or a black person, if they had said such a thing not too long ago. I would have been irate. Like, what do you mean? That no count O.J. killed those. Anyway, That was yesterday. Things were normal on the plantation up until about the time that that program ended. It has been rainy and like overcast, stormy, not just rainy, you know, typical Seattle, not sunny weather for the winter. So it's been that for a few weeks, but the wind intensified greatly after the program went off. I went outside on the porch briefly. The lights flickered. They stayed on. I came back in, didn't think anything of it, and then whammo, power went out. And I mean, the power went out. It was like pitch black, like blindfolded black. No street lights, no nothing for as far as you could see. No stars, no moonlight. It was a little scary with all of the boogaloo and rioting and white terrorists and armed white people out. The Nashville bombing, with everything that has been happening, with total blackness, no electricity, you can't even see in front of you. It was like, wow, I hope there is no like purge effort planned for Seattle. I was not prepared for a total blackout and stumbling around, but that's why it's important to have a code so you can get to your candles, get to your flashlight or whatever else that you need, and make sure you can keep the premises secure and all of that, have a whole family plan. But man, to be in the midst of everything else with the Rona and shutdowns and all the rest of it, to be stuck in the dark and then obviously cold since it's no electricity, man, it was a little dicey. So I was not able to upload the broadcast from yesterday until way in the afternoon. The power's back now, obviously, we're broadcasting, but it was a little wild for a moment there, especially since it was out for such a wide radius. You couldn't really leave and say, oh, I'll just go to Starbucks or whatever, because there was no place, at least no place that I could find that had power. So if you were looking for the broadcast and thinking that we had just been lazy and shiftless, that is not the case. No juice, OJ, no juice, couldn't do anything, and couldn't even promote and get all of this set up. Like, this was kind of last minute in promoting and all of that, because, you know, couldn't work. So tough 2021. I sat in the dark and cold in the midst of all that and thought, wow, we did all that hoping to get out of 2020 to be in the exact same spot in 2021. Woo, rough times on the plantation, but the power's on. We are here. Miriam I. Carey, our guest for today's broadcast. When he was with us last time, 2019, it was so much material to cover in his book, The N-Word Is No Secret in the Service. So much material. He talked, man, it's like workplace racism every page. We spent so much time talking about how do you deal with white coworkers? How do you deal with racist white coworkers? How do you deal with black coworkers? How do you deal with mentally compromised individuals? Black employees, and not break down to where you have to strangle them and call them a whole lot of names and things. Like, it was fascinating. But my failure was, he has so much important information about the 2013 killing of Miriam Carey that we did not spend as much time on that. We really didn't get to get into the details of that. We had callers, and it was, like I said, just so many details to discuss. Thankfully, we have been able to remain on the air that we can correct some of our errors, and this is a glaring one, to be able to go back and really get as much information as possible and to contrast the conduct of the Secret Service, the Capitol Police in Washington, D.C., their conduct in 2013 to what the world witnessed and largely condemned last week in Washington, D.C. Mobs, white mobs. They killed a police officer with a fire extinguisher, unless I've been misinformed. People dying right on the steps right there and breaking windows and breaking into the cab. I mean, lax security effort. I think my best quote from last week, they said they were overwhelmed and that they underestimated the white mobs that descended on the Capitol. We will contrast these two as we proceed. Real pleasure to have him visiting with us again, the author of The N-Word Is No Secret in the Service. our guest, Mr. Muhammad Abdul Rahim. Mr. Abdul Rahim, you with us, sir?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Gus?
Right poorly, but I guess I will not complain since the heat and power are back on. I don't have to sit in the dark. I will, you know, take it as it is. Thank you so much for being back with us, sharing a bit more of your time, and hopefully it'll be right on time for people listening in. We didn't get to Miriam Carey last time. It will be extra special to do so this time around. For folks, I'm sure for some people, this is their first time hearing from you. Any information you would like to share about who you are, the work that you do before we get started?
Well, my name is Muhammad Abdul Rahim, and a little bit about my book. I was an officer in the United States Secret Service for a little over 10 years. And what I did was, of course, during that career, me, like any other, you know, black person at work, I experienced a lot of workplace racism, things like that, seen a lot of things, met a lot of people. And I decided to put it on paper and write about my experiences, some things about my life, and put it in my book titled The N-Word is No Secret in the Service. It covered many topics as we are here to discuss today, the Miriam Carey murder and many other things. So a little bit about me.
Much obliged. The N-Word is No Secret in the Service. You can get it online, Amazon, all your typical outlets if you need more reading material. I guess before we get started in your time in office, what years did you serve exactly?
I started in 2006.
2006. Okay.
So you were there. That was under Bush Jr.
Gotcha.
Yes.
And so that's Bush and then into the Obama years.
Yes.
Okay. And at your time serving, did you ever fire your weapon any time during that 10-year period?
No, I did not. I did not fire my weapon, thankfully. Never had to. That's not very common in the United States Secret Service anyway, for an officer or an agent to fire their weapon. But, you know, thankfully, I never had to fire my weapon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You, in your book, you have, as I said, a whole big chapter, and it's later in the book where you've already gone through a lot of different incidents of racism and just kind of talking about the culture of the Secret Service. In fact, I feel like that's probably excellent context because you do talk a lot about the culture and the types of folks who would be working this job and specifically the personalities of some of the folks who were involved in the Miriam Carey shooting. But can you just give us a sense of what is the culture? Who are the types of people that you're going to be working with if you want to join the United States Secret Service?
Well, first, the United States Secret Service, like any other law enforcement agency in the country, is pretty much, you know, is going to be a white supremacist-based organization. That's just how it is with all law enforcement agencies. Now, of course, some law enforcement agencies are going to be more blatant than others with the racism towards people in the public, black people in the public, and their employees themselves. But the United States Secret Service was a little more unique to where they did a good job where the racism was very, very intense. But the United States Secret Service historically always did a good job in picking the right kinds of puppets, of black puppets, to do their work for them. And, you know, people who would look good on diversity posters to create an illusion that this racism isn't as intense as they say it is. In addition, I have never been around more scared black people in my life than in the United States. I'm sure there are others in other places. Just in my experience, these the black employees were terrified to say anything about anything, you know? So it was pretty much always like a white man's playground. You know, the agency, it was pretty bad. And this has been in the news on some outlets, a few major outlets, some minor outlets, but the racism in the United States Secret Service was intense. And I believe it's possibly, when it comes to federal agencies, that has been ranked as the worst agency, the worst federal agency some years to work for, worst federal law enforcement agency. So with them statistics, that's not considering black employees. People have to remember that's for white employees. So if we have an agency that's considered as been ranked as one of the worst top three, 1 year, I think they were top one employees for federal law enforcement, I just imagine how bad the black people are getting dealt with in there, you know? So that's how it's like to work for the United States Secret Service, man. You go in, keep your head down, do your job, and leave. You'll be faced with a lot of obstacles. And if you are somebody who wants to speak up against injustice, you can. You will pay for it, but you will be persuaded not to by people who look like you if you're a black person.
Wow. System of white supremacy is terrifying. I have used the word terrorism a number of times. In fact, that was the word we used yesterday. We were talking about Mark Furman, although Patrick McKenna did relate Mark Furman to the conduct of white enforcement officers the same way that we're talking about in calling them domestic terrorists. So I can exactly see why it would be a scary proposition to do a lot of, they call it snitching on incorrect behavior in the workplace. Speaking of incorrect behavior in the workplace, you do a great job, I think, of kind of setting up the Miriam Carey shooting. Like, you start the chapter just talking about, like, hearing about this, that shots are fired, and Bonnie being like, whoa, shots fired. Like you just said, I've never fired my weapon in my my 10 years here. Like, that's crazy. Like, shots fired? Like, how did that even go down? And then starting to protest the process as you get more information and telling folks, like, okay, wait a minute. Now, there have been other incidents. I'll read a little bit from the book just so our listeners grasp. But you're telling folks, like, okay, there have been other incidents. And you say, literally, these dudes actually shot someone? Never did I think these guys would have to fire their weapons. There have been times when I felt like the United States Secret Service officers should have fired their weapons, and they did absolutely nothing. Last week, maybe? Anyway, Omar Gonzalez and Oscar Ramiro Ortega Hernandez are two names that I spoke about previously. These two men attempted to assassinate President Barack Obama. Both were unsuccessful. They are also alive to tell their story. So why is Miriam Carey dead? Let's get these two stories before we get to Miriam Carey. Omar Gonzalez, Oscar Ramiro Ortega Hernandez, they attempted to assassinate President Obama and live to tell about it?
Oh, yes. This is public information. This is in the news right here. You have one. Sometimes I get the names misconstrued because they both have pretty long last names. So one of them was the man who stood on Constitution Avenue and fired his high power rifle at the Truman balcony from Constitution Avenue into the Truman balcony, second level of the White House. The other is a man who previously was around the White House area with a machete, saying things like, you know, things that people say who are mentally ill, you know, I'm Jesus, things like that, things of that nature. And he came back, actually, and jumped the fence and made it into the White House, walk right past the last line of defense, who had a firearm, who should have shot him, made it into the onto the floor and was able to get into a wrestling match with a book bag on. So when you think about that, you got to think about it. This man from Pennsylvania Avenue jumped the fence, made it past the fountain, made it past the attack dogs, the tactical squad, made it all the way to the front door, walked right past the officer, the armed officer who was standing there, made it inside, and he was able to have a wrestling match. Was not killed, was not shot.
Backpack, machete. I don't
previously know. He had a machete. I'm not sure if he had the machete the day that he jumped the fence and went in. I'm not sure. But he was around the area previously, so they had record of this man. They knew who he was. He had a record. They took, and even the day that he had a machete, he wasn't arrested. They let him go. So that's why he was able to come back.
Context of white supremacy. Do you think if these folks, because I don't believe either of these folks are classified as black, do you think if someone classified as black who looked like me or you attempted to do this, do you think it would have been the same response? Wrestling match, no arrest, live to tell about it?
No. Here's something interesting with the situation as far as the Constitution Avenue shooting. This is interesting. they made that man who shot at Constitution Avenue, so people put it over the air to the communication center, who constantly, you know, you have people who say, hey, this is going on. They repeat what's going on. This is an area. This is the number one way of radio transmissions. Somebody put it over the air and told them that the person was a black man.
Wow.
Yeah, I wrote about that in the book. So this wasn't a black man, but after that shooting, when he ran away, it was put over the airwaves that it was a black man. You know, so, and that's sad because, and my thing is, suppose there was some innocent black man walking home from work. There's a lot of people in that area, you know, who are coming from work, going to work, doing whatever. Maybe they left their job, and it's a lot of an innocent black man walking down the street and just making the wrong move could have got his head blown off because of that mistake. You know, there wasn't a black man, but, you know.
Black male privilege. Black male privilege.
Right.
So with that sort of context, you talk about, you start off giving, trying to give as much detail as possible with Miriam Carey back in 2013. She
right.
is driving, and she has her one-year-old in the back seat. She's driving.
Right.
She's going the speed limit. She's driving, and she gets to this, they call it a this dirty location, and you can explain that. What's it? It's at 15th and E Street, and you said you've worked this post
yes.
before. And just, I guess, if you can explain why it's so dirty,
okay.
what's so tricky about this location?
Okay, so Miriam Carey entered at a place called 15th and E. It's on the corner of 15th and E Street. Okay, so this is a location where pretty much all the vehicles who are entering the White House complex, their contractors, work vehicles, and employees, they have to go through this area every day. If employees, if they're not parking outside the White House, but if they're going in, meaning somebody who is probably a little more important, or if they're coming to do some work, some contract work, they have a truck, they have things like that. You have to go past this area to get screened. And there are canine explosive dogs, and there are also crews who inspect vehicles for bombs and explosives and things like that. Everybody has to go into this area. Now, once you get past this area and this dirty area, you go to a clean area. It's considered clean. So you are let in past this area. You can't just go right into the clean area. This is the area that's considered a dirty area where you are, you know, screened at. There's nothing off the street that keeps people from coming into this area, to this dirty area, before your screen. There's nothing. Anybody can drive in or walk in off the streets. And people do this all the time. If they're lost, they might make a turn onto there. They're walking in. They think they could just walk in and think, oh, this is a park, and they walk in or whatever. People do it all the time. This is a very common mistake. That's what Miriam Carey did. She went into that area. Very common mistake. And when people go into that area, they're just told, hey, you got to leave. It's that simple. That simple. No arrests, you know, nobody's getting locked up. The only time it'll be a problem is if somebody refused to leave, then it's a problem. But this happens all the time. And she made the mistake that most people do. A lot of people do. She came into a dirty area where the people, she's not getting past the bollards and things like that into the clean area. But hey, you got to turn around and leave. You can't be here. That simple.
Now, in the book, you talk about, and having said, you've worked this area. It's really easy.
Yeah.
People make this mistake. I've driven in D.C. We were there for our counter-racist retreat this summer. They got all those wacky one-way streets and things, so it can be a little confusing if you are not from there to drive there, and the traffic is kind of confusing, too. So you see people make right. this mistake, driving, whoops, whoop, whoop, not supposed to be here. Okay, you just leave.
Correct.
And you said, one, when people are there, as I just said, you have a lot of tourists and things. It can be intimidating. You got, as you just stated, canine dogs, armed guards all over the place. It can be a little bit intimidating. And you said your
yes.
observation, like black motorists, they tend to be a little more fearful when they go, if they like
yeah.
accidentally come into this area. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. You can tell. You know, naturally, we are more fearful of the, you know, law enforcement, the police, guns, dogs, and things like that anyway. So in my experience, the times that black people have made this mistake, yes, they have been pretty more scared, a little more shaken up. Like, what did I do wrong? Pretty much wanting to explain themselves and saying that, oh, my God, what did I do? You know, as opposed to, you know, some people like, hey, what's this? Okay, you got to leave. Oh, okay. Well, you know, black people, naturally, our experience and relationship with law enforcement is a lot different. So, yes, we tend to be more startled and worried and just wanting to do everything right when we get into those situations, to the point sometime where you have to calm people down, you know? Mm. But that's just the way it is, yes. I've seen that numerous times.
Mm. One huge component, and then the other component that you talked about. Now, you just said, having worked this post, I've seen this, I'll see people, sometimes you might have to calm them down, like, hey, you didn't do anything wrong, take a few breaths, just need you to turn out this way, no big deal, just turn around, no arrest, we don't need an ID, just turn around, thank you, have a good day, be safe. You said some people, no, it's, hey, I gotta, as it puff my chest out, I gotta be macho, what are you doing? What are you doing around here? Hold that. Can you kind of talk about that different macho attitude that some people have?
Well, in the United States Secret Service, a lot of the guys working in the White House area, see, there's a thirst sometimes for guys who want to at least for do more combat work, and they don't have that opportunity, you know? You know, it was more so minimum to you know, the police work, maximum to protection, you know. So you get a lot of guys who, you know, they want to jump out. They want to do certain things. They want to do more, you know, proactive police work. They want to be able to enforce or impose their will on people because they have a gun or things like that. And a lot of times they don't have the opportunity to do so. So what I realized about a lot of the guys who worked with me, a lot of the white guys, co-workers, any opportunity that they had to do that, to get that off, they would take advantage of it. A lot of them, more than not, they would take advantage of it. So you have situations where, for instance, this situation at 15th and E, like I said, if somebody comes in, the outcome is always the same. Hey, you just have to go. That's all. You know, but guys would take advantage of that opportunity to, you know, huff and puff and be tough and stick their chest out and yell and, you know, put their hand on their holster and, you know, act like they're tough guys and things like that to intimidate and scare people. Yes, that was very common. I've seen that quite often, and as a matter of fact, I see that a lot in law enforcement myself. So, yeah, that's something that quite a few guys did. They took the opportunity for something that they can't arrest anybody for. You can't enforce anything. All you can do is give them a verbal command. Took those opportunities to, you know, huff and puff and be a tough guy and act like, you know, violent, like they can get, you know, they can get violent if they had to. You know, just some low self-esteem, weak stuff.
Hmm. Man, oh man. We are talking to the author of The N-Word Is No Secret in the Service, the author, Mr. Muhammad Abdul Rahim. You take what he just said. We spent a good chunk of yesterday talking about Mark Furman. What he just said, that is like exactly like, yes, give me an opportunity to push around some black people, especially a black male. Give me an opportunity to push around some black people and plant evidence on them and burn up the niggers and show them I'm a tough guy. He was in Vietnam. Service record. A lot of the folks that are in the Secret Service, did they have service record in the armed forces?
Yeah, it's a good amount of people who are in the armed forces. Yes, good amount. Yes, that's for any law enforcement agency. There's always going to be a good amount of people who are in the military. Yes.
Mark Flippin Furman. Keep that in mind as we're studying all this. That type of profile, the individual who would want to wear a badge and a gun. Look forward to getting up and grabbing my nigger knocker every day and going out. Remember that with Norm Stamper? We talked about breaking rank. But anywho, so at 15 and E, unarmed black mother, no machete, no backpack, no bombs, no firearm, unarmed black mother, 1-year-old child. And they see, oh, she's got a toddler in the back seat. Pulls in at 15 and E, and she doesn't do the, oh, what, all this, and roll the window down and apologize.
Right.
She just turns out. Whoops. Oh.
Right.
And peels out.
Right.
You say, is that a problem?
No, it's not a problem at all. I mean, what she did was not a problem. Was it a little suspicious? Yes. But that means nothing. The only thing suspicious about it is that she didn't roll the window down and talk to these guys. She just kept on going. You know, most people, you know, when somebody's gesturing, hey, what you doing? They'll roll the window down. She just kept on going. She was getting out of there. And contrary to popular belief, she was not speeding. You know, I've seen some videos where they kind of made the car look faster than it was really going. She wasn't speeding whatsoever. She just left. That simple. She didn't talk to the guys. She just left. And the guys who were trying to get her to stop and talk to them, they didn't pay any attention. Like, okay, well, that's whatever. She's just gone. You know, it was not a big deal. It wasn't a big deal at all.
You explain in the book her driving away, regardless of whether she rolls the window down, has any sort of verbal exchange with them or not, at the end, the result would have been the same. Get out of here.
Yes.
Go on your way. Drive safely. That's what she did.
Yes.
Didn't speed off. Like, hey, that's what this would have been anyway. We could have ended this right here. The barricade, that's one fella who's off duty, and I guess he left his post a little bit earlier, what have you, and he comes to put a barricade. Is that like United States Secret Service protocol? Put a barricade in front of a vehicle?
No, not at all. So the story that I heard earlier, I mean, the recording that you played earlier, I heard that it cleverly said that she ran into a barricade. It's not true. It wasn't a barricade that she ran into. She would have wrecked her whole vehicle if she ran into a barricade. What happened was when she was leaving, on her way out, there was a guy who was off duty. He was on his way home. He noticed that the officers were trying to, you know, gesture for her to stop and see what she was doing. So when he seen this, he took it upon himself to be a superhero and grab a bike rack and throw it in front of her car. It's a bike rack. He's off. He's going home. This guy doesn't look like a military guy, doesn't look like a soldier, doesn't look like an officer of the law. He's on his way home. He grabs a bike rack and throws it in front of her car. After his first attempt, he failed at that. He went and grabbed another bike rack again and jumped in front of the car with the bike rack. Now, I know some of these guys are stupid, but not too many of them would jump in front of a speeding car that could not run him over with a bike rack. He jumped in front of the car with the bike rack because that's how slow she was going. He felt confident, like, hey, I can do this, you know? And that's when he got tumbled over.
That was a huge part of the initial reporting, as though she used her vehicle as a weapon. Ran this officer, or attempted to run this officer down, and oh my goodness,
right.
Like this mentally ill black female, and she endangered an officer. You know, she's trying to run people down who are just trying to get her to stop, and he's off duty when he's got his cooler, right? He's coming through with his or whatever that is, walking through, and he grabs, as you said, the rack two times to try to stop her, and she just peels out. He falls to the wayside. And again, you said United States Secret Service protocol, you are not supposed to grab a bike rack to stop a vehicle.
Right. I mean, how do you stop a vehicle? You know, that was just him basically trying to stop her car. I guess he would have grabbed anything that he could get his hands on at the time and threw it in front of her car to try to stop her. And why even listen to him? I mean, this is just some guy on the street. I don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. Who are you now throwing a bike rack at me? You know? And there were witnesses there who even clarified that she was not speeding, and they attested this entire situation. And that's pretty much the whole case. This is where a vehicle can be a deadly weapon, true. But this is where this whole using the vehicle as a deadly weapon comes from. It comes from this guy, not the guys who were working on duty. they don't have time. They don't want to chase a car anyway. If that, when you're working at that specific post, you want to just go home and just, it's almost time to go home. It was this guy who wasn't even working, who was on his way home with a cooler in his hand, who was the entire case.
Context of white supremacy. So, and just policy and procedure. That was what they talked about last week. Policy and procedure. We had to have some policy and procedure failures to have this white mob invade. We have to look at this. Might mean some people need to be fired. Same thing with Miriam Carey. So we got one with the bike rack from an off-duty officer. Are United States Secret Service agents, is there supposed to be like a vehicle pursuit? Like somebody turns into this area and they turn around. Are you all supposed to hop in your vehicles?
And... No.
No?
Not at all. Not at all. See, the reason why there was a vehicle pursuit, because you remember, this is going over the air as this car was used as a deadly weapon. You know? So it wasn't so much that, oh, left and drove off, so we're going to go in hot pursuit of her. It was put over the air that she knocked over or ran over an officer, you know, who, being the guy who threw the bike rack in front of the car and he was on his way home with a water, with a cooler in his hand. So if that's put over the air, somebody's using the vehicle as a deadly weapon, of course, you're going to have things that are going to happen after that. That wasn't the case, though. That wasn't the case. And that was clarified as well. But, you know, guys still want to do what they want to do and go in hot pursuit. They want to do that police work. You know, some guys just, they thirst for that. And that's where the rest of it comes from. So initially, this wasn't supposed to happen whatsoever. You know, it was not even supposed to get that far to the Capitol. It wasn't supposed to happen. That's where it all started at. This guy throwing a bike rack in front of the vehicle. They knew that there was a baby in the car because that was put on over the air as well.
You're right. I'm reading a little bit from your book. He speeds up to apprehend Miriam Carey. This area on 17th and Pennsylvania is where he was going. He was waiting to be relieved by the next shift. This officer waiting to go home heard that a vehicle came into 15th and E Streets and hit a United States Secret Service guy and kept going. Okay.
Right.
Now the chase is on. Let's go. Tempers and emotions are involved. U.S. Secret Service White House surveillance teams have a reputation for being overzealous, but they are still untrained and inexperienced. High-speed chases are not part of their daily routine. I said, now, I'm reading this again. I look at last week. Read this again. U.S. Secret Service, White House surveillance teams have a reputation for being overzealous.
Right.
I look at last week. Yeah. Look at this again. I say, man, what? Huh. I don't, I said, well, let me, I'm stupid. Let me start off slow. I say, so let's just go from the beginning. What do you mean when you say that these Secret Service teams have a reputation for being overzealous?
Well, it's pretty common knowledge within the agency, you know, the guys, people who are assigned to the White House branch or other branches and people who frequent the areas of, you know, downtown D.C., meaning the White House area, 15th, 17th Street, Constitution Avenue, Pennsylvania. You know, you have a lot of people who are going to work, going about their daily lives. People who have a lot of experience being in those areas, whether it be for work every day, they pretty much know that the U.S. Secret Service guys harass people, racially profile. This is just normal. You know, make a big deal out of nothing, you know, harass homeless people, you know, a lot of guys that you see who work out there are actually picked and selected to work on these surveillance teams, these race soldier surveillance teams, because they will do that, you know. So and within the agency, we knew that the guys outside, like, that's what they did. I mean, this is like everyday normal behavior. You can hear certain ones have reputations for being a little more than others. You have some who are laid back, but if the energy of their supervisor, if he was one of those guys, and which it usually was, that's how the guys acted, because they knew they would be applauded or rewarded or for acting like this way or acting in this manner, which is do more police work, do more surveillance work, you know, do this. You haven't done this. So quite naturally, when you get some white boy straight out of the military from, I don't know, Lake Okeechobee, Florida, whatever it's called, or, you know, somewhere out in Ohio or anywhere, who has never dealt with black people before, might have come straight from the military, quite naturally, he's going to look to harass and profile black people. That's just the way it is. That's just how they roll. That's how they work. And I had a serious issue with that. I didn't like it at all. I didn't like the guys who did it. I made it my business not to speak to them. You know, it's just how it is.
Getting my Mark Furman reference in again. He worked for the LAPD, but he was born right here in Washington State, eastern part of Washington State, and then retired, moved back out to Idaho. So having folks who are out in those like Midwestern super white enclaves, and then they come decide, mm-hmm. I want to be an enforcement officer in Washington, D.C.
Right.
or L.A.
Right.
New York, wherever, and harass and beat up black people and plant gloves on O.J. Simpson, shoot down Miriam Carey, that type of thing.
Right.
But reputation for being overzealous, I say, okay, I get it. That makes sense. I've experienced that. In fact, we had a Washington, D.C. council member on the program back in 2013. This was when they were first talking about legalizing cannabis in a number of different areas. And I'm in mm-hmm. Washington State. I think by then we had already, or they had already legalized cannabis, recreational cannabis use in this state. And they were talking about doing the same thing in D.C., which they have done now. And at the time,
right.
this is a black female council member. She was opposed to it being legalized. And part of her justification was overzealous enforcement officers in D.C. And I remember her telling me specifically, she said, you live out in Washington State. I don't know about out there. Here, right. you might bump into an FBI agent, Secret Service agent, all kinds of police officers just as you're going to the store, what have you. Like, you just don't have yeah. the level of security enforcement officials that you do here in other places. So if they're going to legalize right. and it's still a federal crime, you could have a lot of black people that are being harassed and hemmed up over this.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
you know, for no reason. I was like, oh, I hadn't really thought it's so overzealous police. I've heard this before. I have
right.
no reason to doubt this. If that's the case,
right.
and you being someone with a decade of experience, how do you explain last week? Were they overzealous last week?
Oh, not at all. The situation last week was at the Capitol, who was Capitol police officers. And yes, they were involved in the murder of Miriam Carey as well. So the murder of Miriam Carey involved United States State Secret Service and Capitol Police as well. The situation that you seen last week, that was at the Capitol, that one didn't involve the United States Secret Service. But no, they weren't overzealous at all. But you know, that wasn't shocking. It's very common. I've seen it before. Like I said, at the White House alone, I've seen guys people who should have been shot that weren't. You know, I also wrote in a book about a woman who came in. She had, I think it was a BB gun or some kind of gun. This is a Caucasian woman. And she rammed into barricades and ran inside, unlike what they said about Miriam Carey. And she wasn't shot either. I remember another guy who jumped the barricade with a book bag on saying that he was going to blow things up one time. He wasn't shot either. And these are things that I actually seen or was very close to. I remember one time there was another guy who ran into a barricade with a machete in the car. This was a different situation than what we were speaking about earlier. Another guy with a machete in a vehicle. He wasn't shot. He was wrestled out, you know. But No, the Capitol guys were not overzealous as the same way that they were in the situation with the Miriam Carey murder. They were not. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is just programming, man. You know, sometimes people try to rationalize it too much. And a lot of us, we do that. A lot of our people do that sometimes. We try to make things better or rationalize things or try to come up with a reason why things are so bad. And it's basically bottom line. It's because he or she is black and they are white. It is what it is. There's no need to continue to over-rationalize and try to think and be a brainiac about this. This is the way it is, you know?
System of white supremacy. Call things by their proper name. Call it what it is. If you have questions about what we've been discussing with the 2013 murder of Miriam I. Carey, the number 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. You in the book, the N-word is no secret in the service. Well, one, you've already told us you're not supposed to be doing vehicle pursuits. That is not policy and procedure. Miriam Carey, once she exited 15th and E on her own, hey, she's safe. No problem. Let her go on her merry way. Hope she's safe. That should have been the way this should have been allowed to go on. She'd still be alive. They don't do that. Off-duty officer puts this bike rack up twice, and then they give out this call. Oh, my goodness. She's used the vehicle as a weapon. She ran over an officer, ran over an officer. So now everybody's all excited. We're going to go chase her down, make this black woman pay. And you write, they were given an order. Don't pursue. And you ask, why did these officers ignore this order and just continue to chase down and kill this black female? Why do you think they just totally ignored the order to not pursue?
Well, I believe they totally ignored the order because of who the order came from. It came from a black person, one. And two, I also believe that this is just what these guys want to do sometimes. Had that order came from somebody whom they seen as somebody that they kind of respected more, they would have stopped. But you know how it is. People do whatever they want to do. This order came from somebody who was also black, and they kept going. They kept going to the point where they even changed the rate of speed over the air that they were traveling at to appear that they weren't chasing her.
That was when, you know, go ahead.
You put the rate of speed over the air. Officers put the rate of speed. Hey, I'm going 50. I'm going 60. I'm going 70. You know, towards whatever, whatever. And they changed the rate of speed. The supervisor changed the rate of speed. Actually, not the officer who was in pursuit. The supervisor who went out there to go as well. He changed it to so that it didn't appear that they were that it was a high speed chase because he knew that they weren't supposed to be doing that. So he changed it to cover it up.
Very important information. And again, that's Mark Furman lying. They talked about that, lying on the search warrant, just lie to justify however we want to mistreat black people and making it up as we go to mistreat if we want to plant evidence and or if we just want to out and out kill them, whatever. We'll just make it up as we go to justify whatever we have done. And the speeding Zan. And that is so important because that could be easily refuted, right? It's 2021. Even in 2013, we had lots of computer technology. You can look at a video and easily ascertain, well, how fast is somebody going? If we're saying this is a high speed chase, we can look at the video like, oh, okay. We can see they did a really excellent job of controlling the video footage. Like Washington, D.C. has like more surveillance cameras than most places on the planet. And I mean, there have to be lots of different camera angles of everything that happened with the Miriam Carey shooting, and we got very limited footage of what exactly happened. That's no accident, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it can be proven that she was not speeding. That's already been established. Now, in order to get that information, that's a whole nother animal. But it was already proving that she wasn't speeding. Now, as far as, you know, things like, you know, recordings and things on video, certain things on video and certain recordings and things that were transmitted over the air, that takes a lot of work. You're talking about things like the Freedom of Information Act and things like that to get this, and these have not been, to my understanding, they won't release them.
No surprise there either. Control of information. I know that was something we talked about a lot back then. Like, it's almost like you just see the same little looped footage over and over. That's all we've seen for about the last 8 years, because they've done such a great job just controlling the footage and what we want to show, what we don't want to show. In my opinion, probably don't want to show too much, because it's nothing but violations. It's nothing to be proud of, contrary to the ovation that we heard at the beginning. This is nothing that we want to, oh yes, let's be transparent, we did the correct thing, Miriam Carey should be dead, and this is why. That is not the case. Let's see, you, before I get the phone line, you, should I get the other one? You talk about some of the folks specifically who were involved in the shooting, and saying that, again, we're just talking about following policy and procedure. If policy and procedure had been followed, some of these folks who were involved in this murder wouldn't have been employed at this time. Is that correct?
Yeah, a few that I know of. At least one wouldn't have been employed, and one wouldn't have been out there on that surveillance team. Yes. Now, there were more people involved, but two that I definitely know of, you know, one wouldn't be employed and one wouldn't have been on that surveillance team to, you know, do this that day with the Miriam Carey murder.
That's the type of, well, I guess I'll ask it this way. If a black person had engaged in some of the misconduct or misdeeds, negligent acts that some of these folks had engaged in, do you think they would have been terminated? Do you think they would have been allowed to hold on to their position?
Definitely would have been terminated, or removed, you know, sent somewhere for mental evaluations and things like that. But, you know, black people in the U.S. Secret Service have been removed from their positions, terminated or harassed and forced to, you know, retire for much less, way much less. We talking, we can go back to the situation when the Salahis broke into the White House. Does everybody remember that? The White House dinner?
Oh, yes. Remember? Two for two.
Okay.
I do, but for listeners who don't, if you could give a little background information, because that's so long ago, like that's like 2009, 2010.
Right. So at the White House, they have a big dinner, you know, every year, which is like this big thing throughout the world, I guess. Everybody knows about it, where they have a big dinner and they invite, you know, people from other countries. I forget all the important people that, you know, when you're inside there, you don't even focus on it so much. But this dinner is a big, big deal. Like everybody, this the White House dinner. Now, there's a couple in Washington, D.C., their last name is Salahi. And they were able to get into this dinner with the president and other foreign dignitaries and important people and take pictures. Now, that's unheard of. They came off the streets and they were able to get inside of this dinner and take pictures. A white couple called Salahis. Anybody can look this up. Now, through all that and all the people who were there, all the important people who were in charge, all the high brass, all these other people, the only person that took the hit for that was a black man. Put him out. He sat home for a couple years, you know, loss of income and many other things, tarnished his reputation. He had to take the hit for that. And actually, other white people were promoted to higher ranking positions who were involved that should have been fired. So what they did is went to one black man, and he took the hit for that. This is all facts. This is all facts. Amazing. but not amazing in the U.S. Secret Service. Very disgustingly racist environment.
I remember that. What I had to double check the date. That was 2009. I remember we talked about that, how they blamed it all on a black person. Like, are you serious? Like,
these, one black man. Actually, two. One left. Maybe he was forced to resign. And the other sat down for a couple of years until they things died down and they called him back. Hey, you can come back to your job. The main people who were involved in this were all Caucasian. None of them got in trouble. And in fact, I believe they all were promoted.
Wow. You in the book, you give more detail about one of the individuals who was involved in the shooting who should have been fired, which I thought was important just looking at the pattern in his work behavior. You write, the first subject should have been terminated for his negligence and disregard for the mission of the U.S. Secret Service in the assassination attempt on President Barack Obama by Oscar Ortega. For people who read the Washington Post or followed the congressional oversight, he is the U.S. SS individual who blatantly disregarded every indication that rounds were fired at the Truman balcony of the White House by Oscar Ortega. Gunshot sounds, proof of debris, and a rancid scent of gunpowder was not enough to convince this veteran official that someone there was firing a rifle at the White House. The information that he received from his trained officers that there were shots fired was not enough. With all the proof and evidence that there were rounds fired, his response was, "Stand down. No shots were fired." The assassination attempt on President Barack Obama was not reported to inspections for a couple of years. If he was anything other than a white supremacist who was favored by his brothers in the agency, this would have been reported to inspections immediately, and he would have been terminated. Protections by his USSS brothers was more important than setting a precedent for officials who were negligent in their duties to the protection of President Barack Obama. Just adding that for context, because it basically, in my opinion, shows the same opinion, total disregard for black life. Did you want to add anything, Mr. Abdul Rahim?
Yes, and I like to add that that right there is public information. If anybody goes back and looks at, checks out the newspapers around that time when this shooting happened, but then to clarify the newspapers or to support the information that is in newspapers, all they have to do is go listen to the U.S. Secret Service congressional oversight. All of this stuff is in there. So basically, in this oversight, his name, he's not described, but he's that person. He's that person who should have been probably arrested for this. And, of course, he wasn't. And eventually, he stuck around and he became part, a role player in the Marion Carey murder.
Context of white supremacy. Patterns. Dr. Welsing used to talk about that all the time. Patterns. Before I nab some of our callers, I was reading or rereading the section on Miriam Carey, and I saw Eric Sanders pop up, the attorney for the Carey family, black male, and I actually spoke with him some years back after the shooting happened, and he was so generous with his time and energy and providing me, a stranger to him, providing me insight about the case. Just can you talk about your experience reaching out to him to try to share information about what you share some of your workplace experience to help him better grasp what happened to Miriam Carey?
Yeah, so at the time I just happened to be thinking about the Miriam Carey situation because, again, in this situation, this shooting, this murder, I knew that it was wrong. And me, I'm the type of person, all I did was think about, you know, my sister, my friend, my cousin, my aunt, any, you know, female in my family, a friend. And I'm like, hold up, it's got to be some kind of way to get some information to somebody. So I just basically got on the laptop and I watched a video. I forget what network it was on, and he was talking. So I'm like, hold up, let me call him up. Or I think I said, no, I sent him, I said, let me send him an email. I sent him an email, and he sent one back immediately. We talking within probably 20 minutes. And after that, we were on the phone. And the next day, he was in D.C. I was like, man, this dude ain't playing. He's trying to jump on this immediately. So I thought that was a good thing. I'm like, okay, so this man is really motivated about getting to the bottom of this. So when I met Eric Sanders and we spoke, he pretty much understood what was going on. He knew, but he couldn't prove it. You know, he knew, he speculated, and he knew, like, hold up, I think this and this and this is what happened. And when I told him that, what was going on, and more, he said, I knew it, you know. Well, and more than that, because there were also some things that he didn't know concerning that. But for the most of it, his intuition and what he thought was true. And so, you know, we sat down and spoke for a long time. And he was a good man, respectful man. And it was for me, it was good to speak to somebody who came from a law enforcement background, who understood, who had full access to that humanity as a black man. You know, speaking to him, I felt comfortable, you know.
I can relate and concur completely. He's super passionate about the Miriam Carey case, as he should be. And as I said, he was, you know, very open and providing details and talking about this case to me, a total stranger to him, and just, you know, being willing to share and provide details, and hoping that more folks would talk about this case and, you know, keep Miriam Carey's name alive and going, and particularly in relation to incidents like what happened last week. Right. Let's see. The person who dialed in, I think this is Rob in California. Rob in California, did you have a question for Mr. Abdul Rahim? Did I get it correct? Is this Rob in California? Might be incorrect. Did you have a question, or are you just listening? Not hearing you. Did you have a question?
Just. Yeah.
Oh, did I hear you that time? Did I hear you? Hello.
I can't hear Rob if he's saying anything.
Me either. Let's see. What the. I will. Let me see if we are not hooked in correctly. I'll try it again. Let's see. How? When?
This service is provided in high definition. Access code accepted. There are 10 participants in the conference. Q&A session has started. The recording has started.
All right. Got disconnected. Not sure what happened there. Got disconnected from the broadcast line. I'll see if folks missed out or what have you. We the archive will be fine. I'm adding our guest, Mr. Abdul Rahim, back to the line, and we'll get to the folks who called in. We had lots of issues. I hope folks, you know, heard I was saying before, but we had lots of issues. There was a power outage in the Seattle area, so I was without power for a good chunk, about half of the day, which caused problems in even getting rolling for this program and getting the program uploaded from yesterday. So just seems like continued problems. But let's see if we got everything back and corrected now. Let's make sure. Rob in Wisconsin, are you with us?
Hello.
Okay, Mr. Abdul Rahim, you're with us?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Okay. I'm not sure. I wasn't able to hear the folks on the live broadcast line. I think we got disconnected, but we should be there. So let's try again. Right. Rob in Wisconsin, okay. Can you hear us, sir?
I'm here.
I think I heard you. Was that you, Rob in Wisconsin?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Awesome. As I was saying, I'm not sure if we got disconnected or what point, but I did see your hand. Wanted to start rolling down and getting folks who dialed in. Archive should be pristine if we had some audio troubles, but it's been wacky day, wacky year, wacky plantation in general. Did you have a question for Mr. Abdul Rahim, Rob, in California?
I don't have a question at this time. I tuned in kind of late, so I'll tune back in a little later with a question. Thank you.
Much obliged. Right on. Glad we figured that out. All righty. Let's see. Irie in Louisiana, did you have a question? You should be with us.
Hello. Yeah, I had a couple questions. When I watched this video, there was a video of her kind of reversing, and there were a bunch of armed officials around the car. I thought I saw even a non-white male at her driver's side door, but or was I incorrect? I'm just trying to figure out.
Yes, I think that in the first video that you may have seen at the White House, the one where she initially left and she was on her way to the Capitol, I think you did see a non-white male standing there near her car. So he was one of the officers who was just, you know, trying to get her attention. And there was also a Caucasian officer with him as well. They were trying to get her attention before she left and trying to figure out what was going on and what she was doing. That was before she got to the Capitol, where she was eventually murdered.
Okay.
Yes. So I believe you did see a black male on video at the White House. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, seeing that, let me know that somebody, or more than somebody, had to see there was an infant in the car. Does the Secret Service security? Yeah. Are there tire spikes or any type of deflating devices that they could have thrown out if they were concerned about her, I guess, continuing to travel around the Capitol?
Well, as far as to answer your first concern, yes. See, it was put over the air by those Secret Service officers that there was a baby in the car. So they knew that there was a baby in the car before they started chasing her and eventually fired all those rounds at her. They knew it was a baby. They put that over the air, that there was a baby in the car. As far as, now, your second question was as far as stopping her, could there have been any other thing, anything else done as opposed to deadly force to stop her vehicle?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were asking?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that could have been a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that again, ma'am?
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was something they could have done to deflate the tires outside of shooting rounds at the vehicle.
Yeah, oh, definitely, definitely. Well, basically, first, they shouldn't have shot rounds to begin with. They could have done anything. They could have barricaded her in with their. If they felt that her vehicle was a deadly weapon and she was using it as a deadly weapon, which she wasn't, they could have barricaded her in with a vehicle, two vehicles. They could have did things like that. When she was close to a barricade, or she was in an area where they could have came up with two cars, a bigger truck. Many things could have been done as opposed to shooting those rounds. But if they didn't do anything at all, they weren't supposed to fire those rounds. If all they did was let her go and get hit the highway, they weren't supposed to fire rounds.
Okay.
Because it's not like the narrative that was put out was as if this was a lady who was using her car to run people over, and she's knocking people to death that did not happen, you know. So that was the narrative that was put out. If anything, they would have just let her go and just go ahead and hit the highway. But to fire rounds and use deadly force, not at all. Not at all. Before that, you just let a person go. Because, again, she did not use her vehicle as a deadly weapon. If she did, that's a different story.
Yeah. Really quick, when I watched it again, you know, what I saw was a mother in fear. And, you know, her response was just to get the heck out of there, probably, I'm assuming. But I'm a mother, too, and I can't say I would have done something different, given that, you know, if she had some trouble in her life, you know. But I want to thank you for your time and pray for your safety. I'm not saying you're in jeopardy, but, you know, revealing information, constructive information about the system at that level is very courageous. And thank you for that.
You're welcome, man. Appreciate your call.
Indeed, indeed. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Retired firefighter in Florida. Do you have a question for Mr. Abdul Rahim? You should be with us.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to the guests. Yes, sir. The metaphor, soft target, is quite popular in my understanding. And I just wanted to get your opinion on something. Being that it was visualized by all of these enforcement officials that this was a non-white black female with a child, did not have any perceived quote-unquote target on her behalf at all. In your opinion, do you think that with the advent of white males wanting to get the opportunity to become quote-unquote heroes, do you think that may have been a motivating factor in that particular incident?
Definitely. Definitely. I believe that's one of the motivating factors. Yes. So with a lot of the guys who worked with the United States Secret Service surveillance teams, that was their mentality. And they were oftentimes select guys who were like that. And once you start that and you're being complimented and applauded for that behavior or being wanting to be a hero and being, as they call, being proactive or vigilant, they start to do it more and more. So to answer your question, yes, definitely, definitely.
Okay, yes. Because as Gus mentioned, I'm a retired firefighter, and although the two jobs are a little bit different, so to speak, but that mentality of wanting to be a hero and the way that one does it is to be aggressive. And right. I would say in the case of your job, it would be a perceived weaker opponent that would be a motivating force that would motivate that potential white person to go on ahead and be aggressive. You know, as you mentioned, this this white male throwing these barricades in front of a car, that is not normal behavior because of the potential of what a car can do. But I'm thinking that he just perceived that the lady didn't have an intention to try to run him over anyway.
Exactly. And that was one of the points I was making in the book. See, this is why he felt confident in doing it twice, because she was not even going fast enough to where he thought that he could hurt her. So the whole narrative mm-hmm. with her, oh, she's speeding and she's running over people and she's aggressive. This man felt safe enough that he can do that. That's why he did it. Because he ain't mm-hmm. jumping in front of no speeding car that he's seen hit one person, two people, ran into a barricade, and he felt very comfortable and safe. That's why he did it.
Yes, sir. A lot of non-white black people have lost their lives, and the excuse is that the person was trying to run me over, the law enforcement official. I've heard that a lot. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. Let's see. Star 6-1, other folks, if you have questions to get in. We've been discussing Miriam Carey this evening. One of the things we've talked about on the program for years, and folks have different views, is in terms of white people being afraid, whether it's enforcement officers or just civilians at large, white civilians at large, whether or not they are afraid of black people. Frequently, this will be kind of given as justification, right, for I had to kill this black person. If it's a black child, Tamir Rice, Miriam Carey, whoever it's, you know, I was afraid, thought I was going to die, whatever it is. So that's why I had to shoot him 80 times. And you in the book,
right,
you write, this is an aspect of law enforcement where fear, belief, and personal characteristics often superseded what an officer is supposed to do as per the law. Fear being that many officers are already scared because they know their lives are always on the line. Fear can also mean that the officer may have been a scared or cowardly person all his life. Fear can also come from the race or physical makeup of the suspect who the officer is dealing with. Belief is simply what the officer personally believes about the suspect that he is dealing with. It doesn't matter what is written in the law enforcement book code. If an officer has a preconceived belief or notion about the kind of person they are dealing with, it always manifests in their actions towards these individuals. With, I guess, the fear component specifically, and talking about whether or not these white officers, because you even have an incident where you talk about one of these officers kind of calling you over like, hey, come on, I need you. And it's just one homeless black person who doesn't have a machete, doesn't have a bomb, is not, you know, threatening to blow everything up. Just one homeless black person. Like, why is this, you know, code red, meet everybody right now. Let's go. Like, why is this cause for all of this alarm? Like, have you seen that? Or I guess, has that been something that you've seen regularly?
Every single day. That's something that I've seen every single day. And if I didn't see it, I heard it over the radio, you know? So these guys are, like the last caller said, the soft target thing. Somebody who they feel as though is not threatening, somebody who they feel as though won't hurt them, that they can overwhelm quite often, will be the ones who they'll pick on or try to, you know, get their bravado juice off on. So these guys will go over the air and say certain things. Hey, I'm at such and such, hold me with two black males, one black male. When that's heard, these guys are coming like cowboys. They're coming like crazy, as if they're responding to a armed robbery in process, a shooting. We're talking about a guy who was there with a camera possibly taking pictures of something that they feel as though he shouldn't be taking pictures of. Or a female, not just guys. You got guys coming like crazy, acting like they're on real stories of the highway patrol, scaring people. That's what a lot of these guys at the White House, these United States Secret Service officers, that's what they did all day, every day, 24/7. That's just the way it was.
I guess, how do you process that? Do you process that as this is bully behavior? Do you process that as, wow, these guys are just a bunch of cowards? Like, you got to go get 50 of your friends to go harass one homeless black person? Like, what? How do you make sense of that?
I process it as white supremacist bully behavior. You know, a lot of those guys are just scared of black people, period. You know, and then they are bullies. You know, you give guys guns, man. You give guys a guy a gun who may have possibly been nothing but a bozo his entire life. You give him a gun, it does a lot to him, you know. Taking the fact that he was, you know, pretty much raised and born to be a racist. So there you go. You know, you have all the ingredients for this behavior right here. Remember one time I asked two other African-American officers who were in the agency, and I asked them, I said, hey, I was like, hey, what would you do? What do you tell your relatives about coming, you know, in this area, like, for tourism or, you know, to go to the Smithsonian or they just want to walk by and see the White House. They don't want to do this. And one of them said, hey, listen, I tell them, don't go down there unless I'm with you. Because he knows his coworkers, man. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, what do you tell your relatives? Like, you see these dudes. And my thing with that is, okay, well, how are you even talking to this dude? That's where my whole mentality and attitude come in. Because I'm like, no, hold up. If one of my people came down here and was walking down this street, this guy that I'm sitting here talking about Monday Night Football with would harass him, you know? No, I'm not talking to you. But a lot of them could do that. That just ain't me. That was one thing I didn't understand about my people, you know? And that's a whole nother, you know, I guess, topic. But the only way to process that is as racist, bully, cowardly behavior, period.
Mark Furman, and talking about him a lot, lots of that in the system of white supremacy, just to harass and bully non-white people, particularly black people, who, that's how Tamir Rice and that sort of thing. See if other folks who...
That was horrible.
Aren't they all? Let's see. I'm confused. I guess I'll check with... I'm not sure. I'll check with Rob in California before we go off the air. Other folks, if you have questions, you can... *61, let us know before we're ready to wrap things up with our guest. I'll keep an eye out to see if folks have anything else that they want to share. I guess with what happened last week, you as someone who spent so much time working in Secret Service, what were your thoughts in terms of when everything transpired? Like if you had still been working, what would have been your role in that melee last week?
That melee was at the Capitol mm-hmm. building, and that is manned and secured by Capitol Police, which is a different agency. But they were involved in the Miriam Carey murder, as was the U.S. Secret Service, because it's so close. But in that situation that happened there, I don't know what I would have done. Of course, if somebody tried to throw a fire extinguisher at me, I would have used deadly force. I mean, I'm trying to go home, you know. I don't know if the situation where this person didn't use it is because there were other people around and they were afraid to miss. You know, firing a weapon it could be a real crucial thing, and to think about missing a shot or whatever. But I don't know the entire story behind that. But we do know that had those people been black, it wouldn't have even happened from the beginning, you know. That would have been shut down from the beginning. They were able to do that, of course, because they were white. And there were all kinds of people in there. They were like, I guess you have these people who call themselves Trumpers. You have these people who call themselves with the other side. They were all in there. They were all in there, man. That was a crazy situation. But, again, like you said, no deadly force was used. None of the guys who were making their way inside. I mean, these people had pipe bombs. They had fire extinguishers. They had a lot of fire extinguishers. I don't know why they had so many fire extinguishers, but I spoke to somebody who on the inside over there who knows this very well. Said they had a lot. Those guys had a lot of fire extinguishers and pipe bombs and guns. So it was real down here. It was real.
Miriam Carey. No fire extinguishers, no pipe bombs, no explosives, none that I've heard thus far. Did have a 1-year-old.
Right.
I'm thinking they're supposed to be like, do you all get security briefs? Like you said you started out, you were there when George W. Bush was there, and then through the Barack Obama administration, like I assume you were there when Obama was inaugurated first time around. Like, you all get security briefs, like, ooh, big crowd expected, be alert, da 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 da. Like, think they would have got like major security brief before last Wednesday? Like, we could have some hooligan activity today. Like, let's really step it up. Like, you don't think that sort of thing happened?
Of course it did. I mean, that is what you think it is, Gus. I mean, that situation, it had to be. They knew that all these people were coming down there. So it's more to meet the eye, and it's more a lot that, you know, people don't know. But I think that was supposed to happen according to them. You know, I mean, it was pretty obvious. You've seen them letting those people in. You've seen Capitol Police guys removing things so that they can walk in. You've seen them walking right past them. This is on video. These are things that people can actually see. Now, I don't know the grand scheme of what it was all about, but just off of what you can see, it doesn't even take a law enforcement mind to understand that, hey, they wanted that to happen. I mean, they knew what was going on that day. They would have had, you know, outer perimeter secured, ready, done. They would have had everything squared away. I mean, I don't get it. But it's pretty obvious that that's what somebody in power wanted to happen or whatever. But I don't know the entire story behind that. But it's very spooky and weird. Very spooky and weird.
Agreed on many accounts. Spook who sat by the door weird. Like, what in the world? And again, like, you're telling me you don't know how to secure the Capitol building? Like, really? Like, we have an inauguration next week, and you're telling me you don't know how to provide adequate security? Like, get out of here. They have reports that there were enforcement officers, Seattle Police Department enforcement officers in the melee, and Olympic gold medal swimmers, and I mean, what does it mean to be white? I don't disaggregate, just leave it at that. What does it mean to be white? Wow. Pillage and plunder amok. Let's see. Person who dialed in 3098. Did you have a question for Mr. Abdul Rahim?
Yes, good evening, Gus. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good evening. Good evening, Gus.
Good evening,
Carl.
Good evening.
Question. The person who fired on the white woman that was the first woman that succumbed to the riot, do you think the person that fired upon them will face any consequences, or will they be lauded as such as that person that killed Ms. Ali Malone?
We're talking about the situation at the Capitol with the woman who was killed, correct?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
I think that depends on who this woman is, what kind of people she had behind her. Typically, do I think that that person who fired the weapon will be charged? That's a tough one. Normally, I would say yes. But being that everything that was going on there and all the commotion and stuff like that, I don't know now. I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. Normally, I would say yes. Normally, I would say yes. But that was a white woman who was killed, correct?
Yes, sir. That's why I was going to just draw continue to draw the contrast. I don't know if you spoke about it as far as Ms. Carrie was treated, and the officers who stopped, who murdered her, were lauded and applauded. Curious, like I said, curious to see, I guess we'll follow to see how this person, because they have not made, made the person who pulled the trigger public, so I'm curious how they are going to frame that narrative.
Right, right. We'll see. You know what? In the federal government, they often don't. The person, like, you know, the person, if a law enforcement officer or agent or anybody fires their weapon and use deadly force, they aren't often, their name isn't often put out there to the public as they do with local police. I guess there may be some kind of laws or protections behind it. I'm not sure. But, you know, if a local guy, I know I've seen incidents where a local guy, police officer, fired his weapon and killed somebody. Their name is in the article very often. But with the federal government, I don't really see that too much. So that situation, I guess we just have to wait and see what happens with that one.
Hmm. For sure. Be watching to see who gets charged on many accounts, the rioters and responders all the way around. Let's see, make sure.
Right.
Were there... I'll double check for you in the book. Also, talk about some of your colleagues, as it were, who also saw the injustice of Miriam Carey's murder. You, as you said, you reached out and spoke to her, Eric Sanders, the representative attorney for her family. Did some of your colleagues also try to make an effort to get out correct information that, hey, this is incorrect, this is a violation of policy and procedure? Oh, hello, hello. You with us? Hello. Let's see, Mr. Abdul Rahim, are you still with us, sir? Hello, hello. Hello, you still with us? Hello. What the way it looks like? I'll see if I'm not hearing. If you can hear me, Mr. Abdul Rahim, we're not hearing you. Hello, hello. I will. Let's see. I'll see if we can disconnect and I'll try and ring you back. See if that works. See if that's what the problem is. I'll try and dial you right back if you're not hearing us. Okay, I'll do it. Man, it's been what in the world? What a day. So we had the power outage, got the power back, was still wacky even trying to dial in, and then the chaos there. Woof, what a day. It is always a adventure attempting to do counter racism. It looks like I'm still connected. I'll see if we can get Mr. Abdul Rahim back with us. Get my last few questions in, and then if other folks have questions that they want to make sure they ask, don't dawdle, don't wait till the last minute. Wow. I thought that as I was sitting in the dark and the cold earlier today, I was thinking, like, man, are we going to have to cancel the program? Like, I won't have. Oh, are you with us?
Hello.
Okay. We were saying we're having all kinds of crazy tech issues. I couldn't hear as I was trying to get my question out, even though it showed you were still connected. I was just asking.
Yeah, I heard you clear.
Oh, okay. Awesome. I was asking about your colleagues. Some of them tried to speak up to share information?
Yes. Yes. There was another officer who contacted Eric Sanders as well, who knew that that situation wasn't right. I didn't even know about it. Like, me and him never even talked. Eric Sanders was the one who actually told me. So, you know, he did things right. He was also, you know, on the low contacting Eric Sanders and letting him know, like, hey, listen, this wasn't right, you know. So, yeah, there was one other one in the United States Secret Service. But also, which I think was a good thing, and I don't know who they are, but I'd like to commend them. There were a couple Capitol Police officers who also contacted Eric Sanders, but they did it anonymously, and they wrote all this information or typed it on a Capitol Police letterhead so that he could show that, listen, this is coming from there. Like, this is official from there. So, of course, you know, there would have been repercussions against them had they come out and said, hey, we're saying this. And they did it the right way. And they did it the way that I think that more black people and law enforcement should do. Like, if you don't have to put your job on the line, you have bills, you got to take care of your family, you got things to do, I get it. But there are ways that you can anonymously contact people to give information, pertinent information and important information that would deal with a lot of these cases. And for some reason, a lot of black people in law enforcement don't do this, you know. And the officers at Capitol Police who did that, whoever they are, I'd like to salute them for that, man, because it's that simple. More people in the U.S. Secret Service could have done that who knew about it, you know, or who thought about it. There's no reason why. And then we're in the area also where the media is heavy. You go into the Starbucks, you go into the salad shop, you meet somebody who works for, you know, a major. You could slip them a note, you know, you could vote anything. Anything. It's very easy to get out. But, you know, for some reason, a lot of our people in law enforcement, we don't do that. And we should.
The terrorism has been very effective, I'd say, probably in most fields. I know we talk on workplace racism like it is. Well, I'll put it this way. White people make it very challenging frequently for black people who try to speak up about racism. I'll put it that way.
Right.
I do, I absolutely think. And same thing, commendations to those folks who spoke up and putting it on Secret Service letterhead to authenticate the information, like, bravo.
Yes.
Like
Capitol Police letterhead. Capitol Police.
Oh, right. Capitol Police, my apologies. Yes. Capitol Police letterhead, like, right on. Like, that's black self-respect. Like, figuring out different ways where you can anonymously, safely share information. But, I mean, white people have punished a lot of black people for trying to speak up about racism.
Let's see.
I did appreciate, because I said workplace racism. We talked about this when you were with us the first time around. You wrote, and this is all within the chapter on Miriam Carey. You said, because of my experience in the U.S. Secret Service, I often strayed away from the views of black people in law enforcement. If I thought someone was a good person, I pretty much just tried to leave it there. I didn't want to take the chance of beginning to dislike them due to their views on social issues with our people. I didn't want to hear their opinions on racism, police brutality, unjust shootings, promotions in law enforcement, and other controversial topics. In my experience, many black people in law enforcement must compromise with injustice or convince themselves that everything is okay just to make it through the day. I felt that minimizing conversations about these topics with my people helped in my relations with them. That is bravo for workplace racism. You have to minimizing conflict. We talk about that on the program all the time. How long did it take you to kind of develop this code to, you know what, I'm just not going to talk about racism with the black people on the job?
It took me about 2 years. 2 years. Yeah, about 2 years. You know, initially I was questioning things. And, of course, we like to go to our own people to find things out. Like, hey, what's up with this? What's going on? People who've been around for a while, who have experience, and they've been through in different places and through different ranks, and the responses just they didn't make sense. So after about 2 years, I realized, like, hold up, these people ain't normal. Like, this ain't right, you know. Their whole viewpoint on things would be their response to things. They would base their response off of how they are treated by white people within the agency. So that became their standard for thought. You understand? It's like they didn't have humanity, a lot of them. So instead of saying, hey, this is wrong or this is right, they would base their response off of what white supremacists did to you and how those people think to certain situations. You understand what I'm saying?
Unfortunately, yes, I'm very familiar. And unfortunately, I understand, even with victims of racism who are not in law enforcement, where they have some of the same behaviors and justifying racist behavior, minimizing racist behavior, excusing racist behavior. I'm painfully aware of that sort of dynamic. I, in fact, offer the same suggestion for the very same reasons. every time we do our workplace racism broadcast on Friday, do not talk to your black coworkers about racism. You might be in for the same rude awakening. You can, exactly what he said, you can go on having a great relationship. You don't have to be mad. You don't have to be calling them names in your head. We just don't talk about race. Right. Just stick to things on the job. What's the plan for today? We have to do security in Section B. Oh, okay, no problem. Just stick to that. We don't have to talk anything about Miriam Carey or none of that. Did you talk, incidentally, to any of your coworkers? Did you talk to them about the Miriam Carey situation, or did you just keep that hush?
Not many. No, I think about two people. We had some use of force conversations as far as the use of deadly force. But other than that, no. And I didn't see much of it going on either. Sadly to a lot of those people there, what happens is I noticed that when people, quite often, many of our people start to get to a certain place in life, whether it be at their job or they feel like they are different than the other black people, I work here, I work for Secret Service, I work for this government agency, I do this, I appear, I can do this. That's them. That's not us, And oftentimes they got to get hit with that life stick and be reminded, yeah, you're still a nigga, Excuse my language, but it is what it is. But that's the mentality that you get from a lot of these people. That happened to her. That ain't us. That can't happen to one of us. That happened to him. It's like, hold up. What do you mean? What are you talking about? But, it's pretty bad. So, yes, I did have a couple use of force conversations with about two people, and that was it. After that, I didn't know. Not at all.
Intelligent, that I would not encourage. I wouldn't encourage anyone right now. No, do not wake up and think you're going to be on your job tomorrow talking about Miriam Carey with your coworkers and all that. I would not encourage that at all. Save that for your personal time and folks that you have some sort of rapport with in your home life. Make sure I didn't miss out on any of the folks who might have had questions. And so I guess now I should double check in, make sure. Any other folks who dialed in with a hand up, everybody is satisfied? You didn't miss anybody with a hand? Questions?
I have one more question.
Retired firefighter in Florida.
Yes, sir. To the guest, while you were employed, were you ever interested in the presidential detail?
No. No, I wasn't. It took me about, I would say, maybe about 18 months total in the agency. Well, I'm talking training included, because training is a whole nother experience of, racism. But about 18 months in the agency, I knew that, man, I just come here and get a check and then try to get out of here. I didn't have much, ambition to do a lot of that stuff, once I got in there. Now, I did work under PPD, which is the Presidential Protective Division, under the Uniform Division at the White House, yes. But did I aspire to be one of the guys walking around, jumping on top of them if somebody started shooting rounds? No. Not at all.
I suspected, but I just wanted to make it official in my mind.
not at all. Most of us ain't down with that anyway, man. If most people, if they say that they want to do that, they may be just lying and BSing, man. Like, who wants to jump on top of some guy, to block bullets? If need be. Not saying that it's going to happen, but it's always happened. I think there were assassination attempts on pretty much all presidents, whether it was big in the news or not, But no, I didn't aspire to do that.
I just noticed one occasion when Ronald Reagan was shot, there was at least one black male Secret Service agent around when that took place. It's obvious. You can see him, you know, in that firing that was going on.
Yep. Clearly, yep. I think that, I forget what he did when that actually went on, but I think I got to go back and look at that video. But I got to see what he did. I got to see what he did again.
Yeah, in my memory, he was obvious. He was obvious in the video. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he was. He was.
And he drawn it. He had his weapon drawn also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could clearly tell there was a black male there when Ronald Reagan was shot.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks a lot, sir. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. How's the weather down there in Florida?
Slight rain, somewhere around in the vicinity of early 70s.
Oh, man. That's
normal.
Right.
No matter what time of year for South Florida. Matter of fact, it's considered to be a little bit cool for South Florida.
Oh, okay. Okay, I was in Tampa before. I was in Tampa, Florida before.
Okay. Cool. That's a little bit further
north. All
right,
thanks a lot, sir.
Yes, sir.
Take care.
Context of white supremacy. Let's see. Any of the other folks that are with us have a question? We miss anybody? Grant, assume that we nabbed all the folks. Try and make sure we cover our Rona bases and not pretend like that is not still causing difficulties. Are you... I guess, has that been an issue for you, the situation with COVID-19? Are you pondering doing the vaccine? Have you been doing, I guess, putting any effort into studying and trying to give some thought to all that?
Oh, I'll never get the vaccine. Not me. It's not for me. I don't do the flu shot thing. I don't let people shoot things inside of me unless, you know, unless it was a situation where it was life or death. But no, I'm not kidding. Since I've been a kid or whatever, or the shock that I had to get as an employee in the U.S. Secret Service for travel, besides that, I'm not volunteering for anything. Not for me, man. Okay. The COVID vaccine is not for me. It's not my, no.
Now, that's do you have any information? If you were still with the United States Secret Service, would you have to get, is that something where it would be mandatory? You'd have to get vaccinated, or do you know?
No, it's not. It's not mandatory. From what I know to be the truth, it's not mandatory. And it's not mandatory yet. I don't know where that's going to go, but no, it's not mandatory. But if they do want it, from my understanding, they can get it. They can get, I did see, you know, pictures of guys, you know, being proud with their arms and sleeves rolled up that they went and got the vaccine. Who are in the agency, but if they do want it, I believe they have first dibs on it. But it's not mandatory.
Okay. All right. Are you, even though you're not doing the vaccine, are you doing the social distancing and taking it serious or not so
oh,
much?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm following the rules, you know, doing, if I go into a store, I have to wear a mask, I put a mask on. But, you know, I arm myself, my immune system naturally always did, you know, anyway. COVID, whatever, the regular flu, you know, I always protected myself against, you know, viruses and flus the best that I could. And after that, there's nothing more that I could do, you know. But, of course, you know, following the rules. I always wash my hands anyway, you know. Remaining 6 feet from people, when I could, I do. When I can't. You know, I don't really think about it too much, but I do respect the rules of other people and, you know, go about my business.
Right on, right on. Trying to check in with our guests, try and get as much information and just see where people's thoughts are at with the whole COVID situation as well as we continue talking to folks. But man, it has been a hoot. I'm so glad, because I know last time we didn't really get to talk about Miriam Carey very much. But man, with the context of what happened last week, I'm so thankful we got a chance to revisit the book. The N-word is no secret in the service. Memoirs of a Black Man in the U.S. Secret Service, Muhammad Abdul Rahim. Second time on the program, you can go back 2019, the first time around. We talked about some more of his experience and what have you, and lots of workplace racism. It has been super informative. I'm so thankful we were able to have you on the program this evening, in spite of tech difficulties here and there. We will definitely look to have you back on the program in the future, kind of continue things. I guess we'll monitor what happens with that officer in the shooting. We'll see what happens there. And then might even have to pay attention to see what happens next week. I think we're still on high alert for the inauguration. So that'll be my last question. What would you anticipate the scene looking like next week? Do you think it'll be tanks, drones, like military force?
Definitely.
That's what you think?
Definitely. A lot of, yes, 100%. A lot of tanks, a lot of military. There's only one secure things like that, and that will be with the military. So, yeah, they're got, it's like now already, currently. And there are more people, more military personnel headed to D.C. I know that for a fact, you know, from people that I know personally. So, oh, yeah, a lot of military. A lot of military. That's how it's going to be.
If we have folks who are in the DMV area, you should be on high alert. They are already on high alert. Like, wow, I would be very, very vigilant about what's happening. And I would be making plans accordingly for next week. Like, wow, I would not want to be in the D.C. area anytime for next week. Mr. Fuller has my empathies, and other folks out there, like, wow, stay safe, stay alert. I would say maybe this is the time to take a vacation, but they got all the Rona restrictions, so that might be difficult. But wow. We will be checking in to see how everything unfolds, though. But again, our guest, Mr. Muhammad Abdul Rahim, thank you so much for hanging out, sharing a bit of your Wednesday evening with us. We have learned a lot, and hopefully folks learned a little bit more about what happened with Miriam Carey. We'll even do some more research more about this case and how this black female, black mom was killed unjustly in D.C. Thank you so much, and we will get the book.
You're welcome.
Hopefully we'll be able to speak to you again soon, sir.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Sir.
Have a good one.
Thank you, sir. You too. Context of white supremacy, second time on the program, Mr. Muhammad Abdul Rahim. The book is on Amazon. The N-word is no secret in the service. Again, Miriam I. Carey, we've talked about her murder for a number of years. I think it was Estat back on the program, one of her in-laws. We talked about this case regularly in 2013 and even subsequently in the years since then. We've talked about it, reminded folks about it, and just making sure people do not forget and or that people are informed about what happened. And again, to contrast the value of black life, you got white hooligans, white cop killers, in fact, who are treated better than an unarmed black mother who made a wrong turn. Anywho, much obliged for the folks who persevered. Tech issues, like, man, it has been a Wednesday. Like, I said that repeatedly. Like, man, I said four or five times, like, all the way out throughout the day, like, man, we might have to cancel the program this evening, because I hadn't even charged my phone. And the power went out, and I think I had like 20% or something on my phone at the time. And I was like, wow, my phone is so low. I'm not even sure I could do the phone, the program on my phone, because the bars are so low. And like I said, it was blackout like everywhere. Like I went, there was no street light, no nothing for as far as the eye could see, just blackness. So man, it has been an adventure. And as I said, now in the midst of all of this and thinking like, ooh, I hope the boogaloo is not out and running amok and, you know, we're going to do some mischief. We're upset. You know, Trump is our dude. We're going to take it out on some folks here. Like, man, if anything, codify. If you have family members or folks that you reside with, I think we had talked about that before. Some people in the New York area, they had lost power for a few days, not just a few hours. And they were talking about getting a generator that doesn't emit a whole lot of toxins and things so that you can still cook and move around the house without killing yourself. That sort of thing is important, especially if you have offspring. Definitely work on that code. Just make sure you can keep the residence secure and be functional, safe, safe. But yeah, it was unpleasant, to say the least. Challenging Wednesday in a series of challenging days. But I'm glad we were able to persevere. And yeah, I'm glad the power came back because it has gotten colder. Anywho, we will be here tomorrow. The book club continues. We'll be back to our O.J. Simpson. We are starting the trial, all of the hoo-ha and build-up, everything begins tomorrow. I'm so looking forward to just kind of be able to walking through all of the evidence, what happened in the trial, seeing how Jeffrey Toobin describes these events, what he excludes, and then the way that he details what's in the book. Very much looking forward to it. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Friday, we'll be here for Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Saturday, Compensatory Call-In. Sunday, we should be here for the Global Sunday Talk. I am looking forward to that one, to kind of seeing the global perspective on the D.C. melee and then the inauguration for the coming week. They've had lots of new restrictions and such in different parts of the world about the Rona. So that should be Sunday, irregular time. 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific, and then we should be here Monday. We have a white woman. She should be with us to discuss health, diet, racism, hopefully excluding dairy from your diet, but that'll be Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We should be on every day for the next 6 days, five, 6 days or so. Anyway, we had a non-white guest on the program. It's been months since we've had a non-white guest on the program, and there were no fisticuffs, no name calling, even got some constructive information, perhaps. I think I'd said before it was not that we would never have a non-white person on the program, but I did say it would kind of be like an albino experience type thing, like, ooh, the cows actually had a non-white guest on the program. There we go. And then we'll be back to white guests only. Monday, I think the rest of everybody so far who's scheduled the rest of the month is classified as white. So, yeah, that was our one albino for the month. White guests only. Anywho, invest if you think the program is constructive. racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal button is in the top right corner. Listener supported Counter Racist Radio. Cash App should be linked there as well. cash.app/$thecows. Much obliged for all the folks who have invested a dozen years. That was something that I thought about in the dark and cold, hoping that the power would resume sometime before we had to be on the air. That it's been a dozen years of us being on the air. That was not the plan or intention, but it is a dozen years. I hope that is 12 years of mostly constructive information. Hopefully we have not been wasting time, because that is a lot of time to waste. Hopefully we have more often than not been sharing accurate information about what it means to be white, things that we can and should be doing to replace white supremacy with justice immediately. A dozen years of the cows, man. However you feel about it, a dozen years of the cows. Any other comments folks need to get in before we wrap things up, get ready for tomorrow? Everybody good?
Hello.
Irie in Louisiana. Yes, ma'am.
Just real quick, the difference between that woman being shot and those people doing what they do, I really feel like the message that came across, is this is white people's country to tear up. And if they find it appropriate to terrorize even the Capitol itself, the Constitution has set forth for them to do so. But if you're a non-white person, you're not a citizen, and you're not even allowed to make a wrong turn. And that's all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. White traitors' lives matter. Treasonous white lives matter. White terrorists' lives matter. Not black lives, not at all. Not black moms, not black children's, none of the above.
Well said, well said.
Yep. And needed too, like that sort of truth. That's the type of thing I think some of the folks who were here, retired firefighters one, when we were talking about the incident with the black teenager, he was accused of stealing the phone, right? That happened, I guess, a few weeks back, and tackled, assaulted and everything. It's more white terrorism right there, even though we had disagreement about whether or not the attacker is classified as white or not. Hopefully that'll come out in the proceedings as this all evolves. But at least some of us suspected that this is someone who could be accepted as white, who did all this terrorism. Just understanding that that's the world in which we live. Like, this type of thing could happen at any moment. Your life doesn't matter. You could be accused of something, whether you've done something wrong, you haven't done something wrong, you made a wrong turn, you made a correct turn. Doesn't matter. You're standing still and haven't done anything. You stole my phone. You looked at me like you wanted to rape me and all the rest of it. And, you know, that is the system of white supremacy, and just having folks, having more of us grasp that. I think our guest, Mr. Abdul Rahim, he said that quite a few times during the program and working with other victims where they don't understand that. That's why you had to have that code. I don't talk to racism with my black coworkers, code I endorse. But he said, we don't understand that. White people have done such a good job confusing us about racism, white supremacy, and just grasping, like, man, literally, white traitors, they are worth more than I am. They will be treated better than I am. Wow. Like, okay, just, you know, you can be upset about it. We should be upset about it. But just making sure that our counter-racist behavior reflects that. Like, yeah, I cannot be going out here acting like, you know, my life means something to racist man, racist woman. It does not. That's, I think, why Mr. Fuller and others kind of encourage that. Hunker down. When you're going to be going out and about, try not to attract a whole lot of attention. Like, man, things could go bad very, very quickly. Just constantly remembering system of white supremacy. White people enjoy exactly what he talked about. They enjoy and will look forward to the opportunity to bully and mistreat you. Like, get excited. Like, oh, She ran over one of ours. We're going to go get her. Vengeance. Ah, get excited about the chance to go shoot down Miriam Carey. Get excited about the chance to practice racism. That's the world in which we live. Folks, all good. We'll be here tomorrow. O.J. Simpson. I've been thinking, like, man, doing all this. Look at all the things that are happening in the world, right? We got, like, the Rona situation. And all that entails, which is massive in and of itself. People talk about that all day long and have been for a year now. The vaccines. We got the new presidency. impeachment second time around, all of these different things that are happening, the different police shootings and the riots and all the other things that are happening. And we're talking about O.J. Simpson still from 25 years ago. Hopefully that also revealing constructive information. I have been amazed about how many correlations there are between the Simpson case and even things that are happening right now. Good old Mark Furman, domestic terrorism, lots of overlap. Might even be some more this week in the section that we're about to start with the beginning of the trial. But hopefully all of our studying and research on the Simpson case has been constructive and has helped people get a better understanding also of white supremacy racism. But the book club tomorrow, Jeffrey Toobin, The Run of His Life, audio section or the 8th installment. And again, we're picking up at the beginning of the trial. Looking forward, and we'll be here for the next 4 or 5 days. If you have any other questions, suggestions, drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. With that, sobriety would be best. Man, in a system of complete and total terrorism, and especially with all the chaos of right now, having your brain computer working at maximum efficiency is ultra important. Like, imagine Miriam Carey, if she's not even able to think well, if they can put that lie and say, oh yeah, she had, you know, a malt liquor in the car and all the rest of it, so they can just tack on even more ridiculous excuses to justify slaughtering a black person, slaughtering a black mother, no less. Sobriety would be best. You never know. You might have to make a life-saving decision on the spot. You do not want any impairments. You want to be able to make the best possible decision, keep yourself safe, you and other folks that you might be responsible for. Miss Carey was a mom. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled. Again, we're just trying to do the small things. Like he said, Mr. Abdul Rahim, he said when he worked that post, it's 15th and E, where Miriam Carey, where she did the turn and everything started, went down from there. He said that it would be so many black people would come in right there and they would be afraid. You could see it because they got all the security and the canine dogs and all the rest of it, white dog, right there. And he said, man, you can see like, oh my gosh, oh, did I do something? Did I do something? All the rest being fearful. That's years of terrorism right there. One, trying to minimize so that we can be buckled so that we don't have that, oh man, I didn't, you know, I don't have my seatbelt buckled or I'm going to get in trouble, blah, blah, blah. Trying to minimize as much as possible so that we don't have these sort of contacts with the Mark Furmans of the world as best we can. And remembering when we go out, like, there are lots of armed white people. We are not trying to have fisticuffs or, excuse me, even verbal altercations. Certainly not fisticuffs, but I mean no sort of, we had some sort of heated verbal exchange over a parking space or a grocery item or anything else. Masks even, nothing. Like, we are about our business. If it looks like somebody is getting loud and rowdy, you should be thinking like, this person could be armed. This could be one of those, you know, hooligans that was out in the Capitol last week. They could be looking to escalate some sort of conflict. I did not leave my residence with that in mind. Time to get out of here. We'll try, you know, whatever reason you left the house, we can try that again later. But no reasons for unnecessary risks right now. Things are very dangerous. Act accordingly. In addition to being sober, buckled, hunkering down if we can, if you are driving, you are not on the cell phone. Again, just the little things that we can do to minimize contact with the Mark Furmans of the world. We also need to kind of be paying attention, so we can't really be texting and all that stuff. Let's be aware what's happening around us. Police behind me. Mark Furman trying to pull me over here. Like, let's be aware of what is happening. It's way too much going on for us to be kind of mindlessly drifting along as we're out and about. All of that said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.